Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors here with 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Time now for our play-by-play call of the day. Last night, Tim Frazier and the New Orleans Pelicans against Draymond Green and the Golden State Warriors.
Grabs a long rebound. Takes it down the near sideline. Stops in the front court. Surveying the floor. Chest pass to Draymond. He's open. He'll fire. Three ball. Good for Draymond.
And the Warriors won it last night. 113-107. The call on 93.7. The Fan in the Bay Area last night. Very pleased now to bring in Ron Lipach, who is with Pittsburgh Sports Daily and has written a book, Steelers Takeaway. Ron, welcome. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing really well. So what inspired this and what theme were you going for in this book?
Well, you know, it's funny. At first, when I started writing this, I didn't know. And then it sort of occurred to me, oddly enough, when I was having sort of a Twitter conversation. I wished Cordell Stewart a happy birthday. People started tweeting back, and, you know, you get some of those folks who say some pretty less than positive things, and it made me realize sort of what drove me to all of this, and that, you know, today a lot of these guys, these players, are looked at as stats, they're looked at as numbers on a sheet, and they're, especially through social media, treated oftentimes very impersonally and very, you know, roughly, because it's easy to do, and just want to sort of bring the human qualities back to these guys, and, you know, to, especially to the team that I love, Pittsburgh. So I just want to make these guys human again to the readers, to see what struggles they've gone through on the field, off the field, the humor, the race, religion, the struggles just to make ends meet, especially for the older players, all those things. I just want to bring these guys back to sort of a human look again.
Which players, in a positive way, surprised you with how candid they were with you?
Well, guys like Troy Edwards, who was a first-round draft pick, didn't really pan out. But, in, you know, a lot of these guys could blame other factors, could blame anything. But Troy Edwards said, you know what, it was on me. Yeah, I should have listened to Hines Ward. I should have listened to the coach. No one should be blaming Coach Cower. He said these things directly, not even, almost not prompted. So, you know, almost all these guys were positive. But the candid and sort of transparent nature of comments like that really, really made me happy to hear and inspired me.
How long did it take? When did you finally feel, I've hit every subject possible so I can actually make this book happen?
Oh, geez, there's 400 guys. At some point, you're talking to guys because you're no longer wanting to fill gaps, because they're just interesting people to talk to, and they all have great stories. So, you know, to your point, it's a never-ending story of the players that come through. And but at some point, you also have to cut the cord and say it's time to go. So I think at some point I just realized that I talked about all the subjects, or the players have talked to me about all the subjects that, and filled enough pages of great content for each of the topics that I felt important to discuss, that we had a book ready to go.
Ron, which player or players did it take the most hurdles to clear to finally get to finally talk to, and in the end it was worth it?
Well, a lot of the guys who were struggling with dementia, who I spoke to a number of those guys, a lot of those guys were tough because their families were a little protective, rightfully so. They wanted to make sure that people weren't trying to take advantage of the players. So folks like John Hinton, Gene Breen, guys from the 50s and 60s, those guys took a little bit longer because it took a long time to sort of gain their trust to be able to speak to them. And then they'd see that you spoke to their colleagues, and then they'd see that, you know, those colleagues felt sort of that I was reliable enough that then they would trust the same and talk to me.
Now that it's there, can you believe the endeavor you've gone through, and what was it like working with an editor and a publisher?
Well, the whole thing was a little surreal because it wasn't my intention to write a book. I was actually approached after doing the newsletter. I mean, I launched the newsletter, had thousands of readers, decided to reach out to a few folks to see if they talked to me. And you know, it's amazing what responses you get when you ask. A lot of people are afraid to ask. And, you know, sometimes it's just a matter of asking and finding these folks. A lot of, you know, a little bit of detective work there, too. But just the process was wonderful. I work sort of in an ancillary industry in publishing anyway, so I'm somewhat familiar with the whole editing, book publishing process. But being on the other side of it was really interesting, and you know, giving away some of the things that you wanted to get in the book, but you can't, and that angst you feel, but you have to trust your editor. All that stuff is really interesting, and it's a great experience to go through.
Obviously, you're someone that knows the franchise, has a great depth of the history of the franchise, the great moments, and so forth. Give me a couple of stories that were related to you that ended up surprising you that you didn't even know about.
Well, a lot of the theme that sort of surfaced as I was talking to these players was one I never really considered, and it was innovation, right? So you have three coaches over the course of, what, decades and decades. Right. And I think because of the trust that the organization put in the coaches were able to innovate, and they were... I mean, Chuck Noll was a master innovator. There's a assistant coach, Dan Radakovich, they called him Mad Rad, and they called him Mad Rad because
I know Bad Rad.
You know him well. Well, what you need to know, the guy is, he's off the wall, and he will come up with crazy ideas to do things. You know, crazy strategies, crazy solutions to problems on the field. And he told me that he had to curtail Chuck Noll on his craziness and his ideas, because Chuck Noll never found an idea he didn't like to try to implement. Mm-hmm. So all these innovations that came through the NFL, so many of them were inspired by the Steelers, and that's something I hadn't really considered, but there's so many use of hypnotists. Steelers did that. The trap blocking scheme, the 3-4 defense, the fact that they had a weightlifting program and a guy from that lifted in the Olympics training Joe Green and those guys at a time when 99% of the teams didn't do free weights. All these innovations, they developed the concussion test. All these innovations that came through the team, through the NFL, so much of the innovation started with Pittsburgh, and the trust that the front office puts in coaches allows them to innovate, which allows them to be successful. And I think that's an untold, or at least previously untold, story of why this team was so successful. But it really comes out across in a lot of the different stories that we tell in this book.
It's interesting. Art Rooney, of course, they get this team going in 1933 as the Pirates. And, you know, let's face it, for nearly four decades, they don't do a lot. They went to a playoff bowl. Whoa. Okay.
Exactly.
That's it. Yet he is a beloved figure, and the players of that era still refer to him as Mr. Rooney. What did you learn about Art Rooney when talking to these players?
Well, that the myth, I even write about this in the book, that, you know, you hear all those stories of how giving he was, how charitable he was, and how great he was with players, and I even say something to the effect of it almost became like a myth that blew out of proportion to me in hearing about it as you grow up. But when you talk to these players, it wasn't. I mean, it really was true. There's a guy, one of the stories we tell amongst many of his charitable and just his charity in general as a person, is an offensive lineman by the name of Brian Blankenship, who starting offensive lineman, was about to renegotiate a contract, but he hurt his neck, got injured, didn't tell the team at the time, told his agent, and he was just about to sign a new contract when he got the news that he couldn't play anymore because of this injury. His agent said, just go sign that contract. And Blankenship said, no, I can't do that. He went and told the chief. The chief said, well, you know, what was your contract terms? How close were you to signing this contract? And he said, well, we're just about to sign it until I got the news. And he said, go to the other room, go sign that contract. And that's the kind of stuff that, you know, how many owners and how many people do that? And that's the kind of person he was. And it wasn't just myth. It wasn't just stories grown out of proportion. This was the real thing. This is how he really was. And that was remarkable to me.
Chuck Noll, of course, comes in, and we've had Andy Russell on the show before, and Andy says he gets in the room. I think Andy was one, I think, of only five guys to survive from the previous regime to Chuck Noll. I think that sounds right, correct?
Yeah, the purge, yeah. He told the team. He said when he got there that first year, he said, almost all of you won't be here next year. And
he told them, I know what's wrong. And he said, you're not very good.
Well, he was nothing if not honest and blunt, yes.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. But Andy Russell said that he changed his stance at outside linebacker by 2 inches. And he thought, this is insane, 2 inches? My stance, 2 inches? He said it made me better. What does that tell us about Chuck Noll?
Well, that's who he was. Chuck Noll in every aspect of his life. I mean, I interviewed the Steelers photographer, and even the Steelers photographer talked about the precision and the technical aspects that Chuck Noll brought to everything he did. And that's who he was. Chuck Noll was not, as a player, a big player. He was a small offensive lineman. The only way he survived in the NFL was because he was a tactician in his own right, and he learned from those folks. He was not a flamboyant yelling type of guy. The way he succeeded was through technique. And he preached technique. Every player I spoke to, the hundreds of players that I spoke to that played for Chuck Noll, they all, almost to a person, when you talk about Chuck Noll, said, yeah, he taught me technique. He taught me that if I get my shoulder just in the right place at the right time on this block, that's the difference between a two-yard loss and a touchdown. You know, those kinds of things that you speak to, just like that story with Russell, that's who he was, and that's how he made that team great. Passing only takes you so far in a football game, but technique takes you further. You know, that's what gets you wins.
Bill Cowher's a different guy than Chuck Noll. When you talk to the players of his era, what did they relate?
Well, they felt that, most of the players felt a little bit like the rah-rah stuff you see on the screen was not fully who he was. A few players, less than positively said that was a little bit more of a show. And so you had some negativity on that end. But a lot of them felt like the change was needed. The first thing Coach Cowher did when he got on the field and on the practice field was he changed the way they practiced, because he saw the team beating each other up like they did under Chuck Noll in practices every day, and he stopped the team and he said, we're not doing this anymore. And the team, I think, had a collective sigh of relief when you speak to all the different players. They said, finally, we're killing each other out here. And I think that's how they viewed him, as more of a player's coach, a guy who didn't necessarily want the team to beat each other up, that he understood them more from a player's perspective and understood the era of the game that maybe Chuck Noll sort of moved past a little bit, according to some of the players. So I think they saw him as more of a player's coach who got the new era of the game.
Mike Tomlin, new era of the game. And like Chuck Noll and Bill Cowher, has at least a Super Bowl ring. What feeling did you get from former players in particular about Mike Tomlin?
Well, I spoke to Max Starks about Mike Tomlin a lot, because he was there obviously when Tomlin got there. And what Max said was, when Mike got there the first year, he ran us ragged. He tried to be the tough new guy. He was young. He was younger than some of the players. And he tried too hard. And he pushed us to the point where once we got to the playoffs, we had nothing left, Max said. He said, but to his credit, the next year he listened. He created a player council so that they can speak to the coaches about their concerns about the rough practices and that sort of thing. And that year they went to the Super Bowl. So I think they viewed Tomlin as another player's coach. They felt like they had a venue by which to speak with him and be heard, much like Coach Cowher. But with Tomlin, I think they felt a little bit less of that, especially early on, that favoritism to certain players that Cowher really liked so much. I think that they felt like Tomlin was more of a guy who was going to listen to everyone and give everyone the same sort of level field at the start.
Obviously, in terms of bookends from Noll to Tomlin, Noll had a dominant quarterback eventually in Terry Bradshaw. And, of course, now, at the end of Cowher, now into Tomlin, there's Ben Roethlisberger. But in between, it was hit or miss as to who the quarterback was. When you talk to players in that hit or miss era, what did they relate to you about the quarterbacks?
Well, like you said, it was an incredibly mixed bag of guys. I think Cordell Stewart's and Tommy Maddox were two really interesting interviews for me on both sides, on talking to them and talking to the players that played with them. Cordell Stewart, I think, from speaking to him, he felt like he was just a little ahead of his time, and that mm-hmm. the fans and team wasn't ready to utilize him in the full way. But if you speak to some of the players, they felt like, as great of a guy as he was, he wasn't really... He didn't integrate himself with other players in the team as well as he should have. And one player speaks to going to his house one day and finally convincing him to go downstairs to his wine cellar, which he had a big wine cellar, and getting all the players to drink the wine instead of staying upstairs and being this formal entertainer, you know, in his room. Let him go downstairs and get into your cellar and drink that wine, you know. And that was that was Cornell Stewart, and he was a little bit more of a, you know, a little bit less of a player's guy, for lack of a better way to say it. And, you know, Maddox was viewed as, you know, Maddox himself was just, you know, he was the guy stuck in time. They were going to draft Ben, and I think he was surprised that that happened, and I think he was angry over that. And I think ultimately, you know, it was just one of those things where he ran out of time there. And I think the rest of the guys in between were all guys that they tried to make work. Neil O'Donnell was certainly serviceable, but no one to carry a franchise like the bookends that you mentioned.
Finally, for you, Ron, now, obviously the reader will take great satisfaction about the stories because they're going to learn things that they never knew before because of the interviews that you did. In the end, now that the work is finished, where is your satisfaction and how this turned out?
I think my satisfaction is that, you know, again, 400 players I spoke to, and a lot of these guys are not household names. A lot of these guys are not the Rocky Blyers and Franco Harris's and Lynn Swans and Bradshaws and those sort of guys. They're the Troy Sadowskis and the Lee Mazes and, you know, the guys that Chad Spans, the guys that, honestly, their stories sometimes were much more exciting than those of the stars because they struggled so hard just to make the practice squad, much less the team.
Right.
That angst, that struggle, that passion for the game that they had to retain just to stay alive in it, I thought was fascinating to me. So I think the pleasure of being able to relay stories and keep those stories alive, those players' memories alive, when frankly they probably wouldn't have been so much, I think is exciting for me because there's 400 guys and there's only so many stars, you know?
Ron, great stuff. Appreciate it very much. Best of luck with this. I mean, it sounds like an incredible project, and it sounds like it's going to be a great read, especially for Steeler fans who are going to learn a lot more about the team that they love. Ron, thank you.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate having me on.
And that is Ron Lipick joining us to talk about his book, Steeler Takeaways. Steelers Takeaways. Great project. And we wish him nothing but the best. And check it out. Okay? Check it out. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by Sunbury Motors. When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the FMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Merce family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years. Thanks to Ron Lipock. It's Steelers Takeaways is the book. If you're a Steeler fan, this is perfect for you. 400 current and former players that he talked to along the way. And it's great to have him on the show today. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com, next half hour. Thanks to Neil Kulong, who joined us in the 3:30 half hour. Coming up, our bowl extravaganza coming up on Friday from 4 to 5. My brother Sean and I will be joined by a guest picker. Now, unlike ESPN, we're not flying in Blake Shelton or anybody like that. We're going for the ratings kill here.
Yeah, he can drive himself in. in his Sunbury Motors Kia.
Of course.
Yes.
Yes. The suit, by the way, is on for one reason and one reason only. He is not just the one-time, he is the two-time defending champion in this event. He'll be here to defend his championship. At the moment, instead of selling digital media, which is what the company pays him to do, he's researching Middle Tennessee State. You would think that would be my job. I'm doing no research on Middle Tennessee State. Now, if you want to know about Adoree Jackson or Ronald Jones or Juju Smith-Schuster, I could tell you a lot. The suit here Friday.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports bozo of the day, it's obvious. It's Tommy Elrod, former color analyst for Wake Forest. Was on the coaching staff for Jim Grobe for 11 years. He played for Wake Forest, was a GA at Wake Forest, an assistant coach at Wake Forest, and when the new coaching staff came in, he was not retained, but they moved him to the radio booth. Well, now, what happened is that they've shown that Tommy Elrod gave Louisville several plays that Wake Forest was going to run. Elrod provided or attempted to provide confidential game preparations to opponents several times, starting in 2014 when Dave Clawson took over as the head coach. Remember, Clawson declined to keep him on the staff once he was hired. So he joined the radio network. He had open access to the Wake Forest football program. Wake Forest cited emails, text messages, and phone records, and concluding that Elrod had tried to give out confidential information. He has since been fired from the IMG radio network and banned from Wake Forest Athletics and its facilities. Unconscionable. Unconscionable. I think all of you know the kind of access that I do have. It's unconscionable. With access means integrity. Access means trust. Access means loyalty. It's the way it is. Cannot happen. What he did is unconscionable. Unconscionable. Joe Paterno, Tom Bradley, Bill O'Brien, James Franklin. Unbelievable how I've been treated. Dick Harder, Bruce Parkhill, Jerry Dunn, Ed DeCellis, Patrick Chambers. Unbelievable how I've been treated. You can't have what he did. You can't do that in this job. Cannot. Can't even casually just go and tell it just before the game. Even go over and say, hey, you know, by the way, can't do it. Even with another broadcast, you can't go over, hey, by the way, hey, check this out. Hey. Can't do it. Okay. Bring in Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. Adam, welcome. Great to have you with us. Happy holidays to you and yours.
Same to you.
Thank you. Let's start with Minnesota. Right before the bowl game, 10 guys, and some of this goes back, I guess it goes back to September, 10 guys getting suspended by the staff. What do you know about that?
So, the thing that's important here is that all of these suspensions are related to an incident on September 2nd, an alleged incident that took place at an off-campus apartment involving a female student. Now, four of the players that were suspended yesterday were also suspended as the local police investigated this situation. There was a restraining order filed. They determined that they could not press charges. The county, Hennepin County, determined that, so everybody was reinstated. So this is coming from the university through a Title IX complaint and an investigation that was conducted from within the university. So what I'm still trying to figure out is what the timeline is as far as appeals, the hearings,
right.
Because obviously these guys, don't believe they did nothing wrong, and obviously should be allowed to play in the bowl game or at least join the team soon thereafter. So this did not come from the team. This came from the university. It is not academic related. It is all the, it's all stemming back from the incident in September.
Jim Harbaugh, obviously he's, you know, he has, he's been telling his team that he's not leaving. He seems to indicate people are spreading rumors about him, but isn't it just natural when a pro job comes open that he will be one of the names mentioned for obvious reasons?
I think so. And again, it was just humorous again that he saw this as rival coaches trying to hurt Michigan's recruiting. I mean, you know, this is coming from NFL media members. This is not coming from other coaches. Maybe they're telling recruits the same thing as well. But yeah, it is a natural link, as you said, to assume that Harbaugh will one day go back to the NFL. I do not believe at all that it's going to happen now or in the near future. But, you know, you never know which jobs could come open. The Colts job in particular, because of his connection there, you know, maybe he looks at it. But I just, it doesn't make sense to go to Michigan for 2 years. It makes sense to go to Michigan and win a Big Ten championship or win a national championship or really restore some sustained excellence there. And feel like, hey, I accomplished something before going back to the NFL, if that's what he chooses to do. I still think Jim Harbaugh is a much better fit in the college game than the NFL, even though he had success with the 49ers.
You follow all of this so closely. So, you know, as you watch the Penn State story play out, and now that you've had a little bit of time to reflect on how it played out, what are your thoughts on it?
It just kind of came upon us, Steve. I mean, obviously you're there and you're closer to it, but you know, you they beat Ohio State and it was kind of a quirky game and bad weather and Ohio State was off that night. But then, you know, it's like they just kept winning and they kept putting up these big numbers and they're playing great at the perfect, you know, at the end of the season, you know, and then they're down against Wisconsin and they look like it's over and then they come back and win. I mean, it really is one of the more remarkable, stories because, you know, I just remember back to when the NCAA penalties were imposed. The initial forecasts were, you know, 10 years. This is going to be worse than the death penalty. Penn State's going to be down for an extended period. And then you saw the somewhat natural dip in James' first few seasons there. And it looked like, okay, well, maybe they can get back to 8 wins. And now they're Big Ten champions. I mean, they haven't won an outright Big Ten title since 1994. So it's almost as though they've skipped some steps here in this recovery process, at least on the field. And here they are in the Rose Bowl with a great opportunity to play and win a signature game on the national stage against a red-hot USC team. So it is just really one of the more impressive things I've seen from a team and from a coaching staff. And James deserves a lot of credit for that and his assistants to get this thing turned around in such short order.
When you look at the conference, Penn State's still a young team at this moment. Ohio State's a young team at this moment, plus others. What does it tell you about at least the next 3 or 4 years, the future of the conference?
It's going to be very deep. At least it seems that way, at least on the east side of the conference, because I don't think Michigan State's going to be down for long. It's just too good of a coaching staff, mm-hmm. too good of a recruiting operation there for them to be down. But you look at what Penn State has at least next year, and Penn State and Ohio State are the teams next year. And Michigan's going to be involved, too, because of the way that Harbaugh has recruited and his coaching ability. But you look at the rosters, and those are the two that you get really excited about in the league. And, you know, we've talked about it for years, that the Big Ten, their problem for a long time was that it was Ohio State and nobody else. And you didn't have that massive teams at the top of the conference that were at least capable of contending for the playoff or a national championship. Well, now you have Ohio State. You have Michigan, who's back. You have Penn State, who's back. You have Michigan State, that's just 1 year removed from the playoff. You have Wisconsin, which is right there. We'll see about Nebraska. They've been a massive disappointment in my mind in the conference. But you have Wisconsin on that side, and you have Iowa. And you have some good coaching hires being made, like Jeff Brohm at Purdue. So I just see this conference getting more and more competitive. And, you know, ideally should have more teams in the running for a national championship.
When you look at how the Final Four played out, did the committee get it right, in your opinion?
You know, I had Penn State in at 4 in my final ranking, but I can't get too upset with the way the committee went, because they went with Washington, who was their number 4 team coming in. And there was really nothing that Washington did to lose that 4 ranking by blowing out Colorado, who I believe was 7 or 8 in the committee's rankings in the Pac-12 championship game, on the heels of another blowout win against Washington State I the only thing that I wonder, and I believe the committee did this because I know the types of people in that room and the whole process of going through at selection. Did they give Penn State's entire profile enough scrutiny? Because when you look at it, especially with the win against Temple, which is now a conference champion, a 10-win team, you have the win against Ohio State, you have a blowout win against Iowa, which this season very strong, and then you have the win against Wisconsin. It's a very impressive profile, but I think the lesson, at least in this cycle, is you can't get blown out. You just can't. And Penn State couldn't overcome that.
And also the fact that the committee in the end picked an undefeated and 3-1 loss teams along the way. There were no, except for Western Michigan, there were no other one loss teams left out.
Right, and it's amazing that we've been through 3 years of the cycle, Steve, and we have yet to have a two loss team in the playoff. I would have pretty much bet my life on it about a month ago because of the way this season has unfolded. I predicted it before the season that we would have a two loss team in the playoff. And it definitely looked that way, one loss versus two losses was a factor. But I also wonder if Penn State could have gotten in had they been more competitive in the Michigan game.
Right.
If they lose that game in the last play, if it's a shootout or if it's a low scoring game, kind of like Wisconsin Michigan was, how Penn State would have been viewed differently. Because I don't think the Pitt game hurt them that much. I think it's the blowout loss at Michigan, a game that they didn't compete in.
What are the of the 10 Big Ten teams in bowls? Give me a couple, maybe three, that you're looking at that you find the most intriguing matchups.
Well, but Penn State's certainly up there for me. You know, I think Michigan against Florida State is going to be a great one. But how does Michigan respond? You know, they lose two games on the final play. A lot of people still think they're the best team in the conference, Steve, and they're playing a Florida State team that sort of fell out of the national title mix early this season, but ended the season playing good football. They were dominant in their win against Florida in the rivalry game. Now, both teams rush the passer at a high level, so wondering how Michigan can put pressure on DeAndre Francois. So that's certainly one. Obviously Ohio State and Clemson, I think, will be the best game of all the matchups,
right.
But Iowa and Florida, low-scoring game.
Yep.
I think that's an important game for Iowa, which really did a nice job of picking itself up after the Penn State loss to finish its season strong. And then I'm interested in Nebraska. It's like kind of the disappointment bowl between them and Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
Both teams had at least a chance to finish with much higher goals this season, and both, ended the season on a poor note. So how does Nebraska feel about itself after the second year under Mike Riley? A win gives them 10 wins, I believe,
right.
And that would be a pretty good position. A loss, and you really question what they accomplished this season.
What did you think of the hire of Jeff Brohm at Purdue?
Loved it. I really think there's a lot of parallels with Joe Tiller. Not to say Jeff and Joe are the same guy, but it's a guy who has an offensive scheme, who has a plan in terms of recruiting and developing quarterbacks. He's going to do something a little bit different and more exciting than what Purdue's done. I think Purdue needs that. Now, is he going to stay? How long did Joe stay? 12, 13 years now.
Right.
If he has success, he's out of there. But I think he gets Purdue in a competitive position fairly quickly in the Big Ten West because it is so wide open. And I think he's going to recruit good players. He's going to be fun to watch. They're a really exciting scheme. I think you have to play that way at Purdue. So I know that they put it out there early in their search that they were willing to spend money and go after some big names. Jeff Brohm might not be the biggest name, but he's certainly a good name, a good coach, and I think he'll have success there.
Kevin Wilson last January got a 6-year contract extension. The recruiting is a big reason why that happens, but the buyout didn't change. What happened in the end at Indiana? Why did they make the change?
Oh, well, it was off-field incidents. On-field, but not related to performance.
Right.
There were a couple of investigations involving the mistreatment of players in their injury situations, concussions,
right.
And other injuries. And
right.
Whenever that happens, that's why he basically took such a small sum of money related to his contract to walk away. He was obviously due a lot more because of that contract that you mentioned. So. Yeah, just an unfortunate situation. I've known Kevin for a long time. I know he's a tough coach. I know he can be hard on players, but those allegations, if true, are very, very troubling. Certainly not at the level, in my mind, of what happened with Tim Beckman at Illinois, but in the ballpark, and that's in this day and age, Steve, you know, if you are going against the wishes of players or trainers or players' families, anything regarding health, especially with concussions, it's probably not going to go the way of the coach. I mean, that's what's shifted here in the last couple of years.
And one other, then I'll let you go, and this is completely different than the Big Ten, but it's very local, because Delaware is going to hire Richmond's Danny Rocco as its head coach, and I just saw Danny's dad on Sunday, and his sister literally lives two streets over from me. So tell us a little bit about the move of Danny Rocco to Delaware from Richmond.
Yeah, really good hire for Delaware,
yes.
Which is, you know, one of the power programs at the FCS level. And some people have asked, well, is this a lateral move from Richmond to Delaware? I don't. Director asked me about Danny Rocco this year. So he's very much on the radar for those schools as well with what he's been able to do at Richmond here the last few years. So I think it's a really good move, a guy who knows the area, Pennsylvania native, and obviously has worked in Virginia, and he's worked at a lot of programs at both the FBS and FCS levels in this region of the country. So I think it's a really, really good hire by Delaware.
Yeah, 43-21 in 5 years at Richmond. Pretty good work there by him, and I agree, he'll succeed at Delaware. He'll do well there. Hey, Adam, thanks so much. Appreciate the time, as always. It's always great talking with you.
All right, Steve. Happy holidays. Thanks for having me on.
Happy holidays. Adam Rittenberg, ESPN.com. We'll wrap it up in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Rudolph, look below. Those four city blocks of new Fords can mean only one thing. We're at Sunbury Motors Ford.
That is right. Only one Ford dealer in Central PA has four city blocks of new Fords.
It's Sunbury Motors Ford.
This holiday season, stop in and see why SMC was voted Best in the Valley Reader's Choice for Best Car Dealership, Best Body Shop, and Best Quick Service. SMC has over 80 new F-150s with savings up to $12,500. Choose from 45 new 2017 Ford Escapes, starting as low as $19,880. And Sunbury Motors Ford has financing as low as 0% for up to 72 months on select models.
A new car or truck from Sunbury Motors is a gift the whole family can enjoy.
Sunbury Motors Ford in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza.
Proudly serving all of Central Pennsylvania for over 101 years.
Naughty or nice, SMC is where you want to be.
We apologize for being a little shy on guests this week.
Oh.
What have you had, 9 in 3 days?
I'll work on it a little better.
9 in 3 days. More tomorrow. Including Bob Flounders, PennLive.com. And then the 1 hour Pick'em extravaganza. Now, I'd like to point out that Sean and I have mastered, and it will be critical in this, that we master brevity. Because now that we've brought the suit into play, the master of overanalysis, we just pick the game. Go.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, especially if we're going to add our usual weekly pro picks. Yeah, we got to. Rapid fire.
Yeah, but you and I know that. He no matter what.
I was almost tempted to say, maybe we should start the segment at 3:35. But it's like, no, we'll keep it now.
Let me think about that. My thought was we could get it all done in an hour. But then I remembered that he's got to analyze everything from the kickoff unit too. And I tried to explain to him over the years. Nobody cares about Maryland's kickoff unit. Right? Except those who are coaching in the game. Now, the Boston College kickoff unit.
Kevin, we're trying to keep listeners.
Come on. Make the pick. Move on.
Didn't even give them that much love before the Pinstripe Bowl.
I mean, look, the suit. Now, again, the suit picked 30 out of 40 right last year. I want to point that out now.
Credit where credit is
due. So let's give credit where credit is due. Mm-hmm. So his analysis has been analysis. All right, and he was 75. He hit 75% last year, and he won the year before at 26-14. Right, so he's the 2-time defending champ. So yes, I do recognize that his analysis has been spot on, but the segment only goes so long. At some point, we've got to get to Clemson, Ohio State. I mean, this suit walks in with stacks of notes. Admittedly, it pays off in victory.
I mean, I'll usually write down your picks as we go along, but I might just have to wait till the podcast and then write them all down later.
Why, are you going to fall asleep to it while he's analyzing it or what? I mean... just do what I do. Okay. I think. He makes his pick. You get the Ohio State next.
Your station for news, weather, business, and CBS Sports Radio. News Radio 1070 WKOK Sunbury and on WKOK.com.